I'd like to welcome everyone to Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio. Frank McKay here with installment number 3 on our journey through the whole bunch of things, actually. One thing is children's television and a book that this wonderful author wrote on Sesame Street, and we're going to get into that in a little bit, and we're going to get into more of the groundbreaking, life-changing show of Sesame Street and a bunch of other things. It was her third book, and there's a fourth on the way. Dr. Lucille Burbank, welcome once again.
Thank you, Frank. It's nice to be here.
Well, we've been talking quite a bit about Sesame Street, and we've talked about the concepts, and we've talked about all different aspects of what it meant. There are some players on Sesame Street who are absolute essentials when it comes to the show's success. And one you spent a lot of time with doing your book, and you interviewed him. The name Carol Spinney is synonymous with Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch, two of the more popular show characters. But you wouldn't know Carol Spinney if you walked up to Carol Spinney. You wouldn't know him from a picture, but you certainly know those two characters, and everyone knows those two characters. Tell us about your interview with Carol Spinney.
It was so delightful. First, let me just say that Carol Spinney, we had made a date for Good Friday, and he kind of didn't realize that. But more importantly, he said to me, "Oh, I'm going to do some work. I'm getting there in New York City at 9 o'clock, going to the Sesame Street administrative office to get some work done. And so why don't we meet around 4 o'clock in the afternoon? Because that'll take me this long." Well, the office was closed. And this guy could have easily called me up and rescheduled, but instead he waited. He waited until 4 o'clock in the afternoon until I came. And I met him at the Gingerbread, a nearby restaurant right next door to the Sesame Street office. And he looked a little bit like, gee, he didn't look fulfilled, like he had accomplished what he came to accomplish. And so I said to him, "What's the matter?" And he said, "The office was closed." And I went, "Oh my goodness." Well, you know, this is an example of how giving these people are that work for Sesame Street. And a lot of people in media are very giving. And so we quickly went to a private dining room in the restaurant, and over onion soup, which he loved and ate, and a fireplace, you know, a fire burning in the background, he told me everything. Mm. Now, one of the things he told me was, everybody on Sesame Street, and when he's at a party, and he does say he plays Big Bird. There was one time he was at a party, and the problem is and I'll just back up here for a second. The problem is on any television show, and even Sesame Street, everything looks, to the general public, everything looks so simple. The show comes off beautifully, a character on television, and everybody thinks, because it looks so simple, I can do that. What's the big deal?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I run into this all the time. They have no idea how many takes you do.
I think, not to interrupt you, but I think we should point out to the audience, too, that Carol Spinney is not only the voice of Big Bird, he's the puppeteer for Big Bird.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The voice was easy, as Carol explained to me, to do, because he just had to go up one octave. And we'll get to Oscar the Grouch's voice, which was very, very challenging for him to create. but we'll do that story. But he is definitely the puppeteer. And this means that that he has to hold his arm up in a vertical position in order to, the Big Bird is 8 feet tall. So in order to get to the head and the move the eyes and the beak, he has to hold an outstretched arm up totally straight. The hand is bent so that he has about a 4.5 pound Big Bird's head weighs 4.5 pounds. So he has that balanced on his hand and holding up his arm. And he has to do that for as long as he's on the show.
Wow.
Now, wow. I know. So here we go back to this one guy. He's at a party. Carol Spinney is. And this one guy comes up to him and says, "Oh, you know, I can play Big Bird. I can do it for an hour in this robust, self-confident voice," you know. And Spinney goes, "Oh, here we go again." Okay. So he says to the guy, "All right, you don't even have to put anything on your hand. I want you to hold up your arm, your right arm in a vertical position, and keep it up there for as long as 5 minutes, let's say," he said. "And you don't even have to put 4.5 pounds, nothing in your hand to hold it up." So the guy does this and everything, and there's a clock on the mantle, and a couple of minutes goes by, and the fellow, embarrassingly, after 3 minutes, no, only 2 minutes, a couple of minutes, I said, yeah, puts his hand down. So Spinney goes, "Oh, well," but he's such a nice guy. So yeah. He said, he concludes it with, "Hey, there's a rule in puppetry. If it's comfortable, you're probably doing it wrong." And he laughs, and I laugh. And then he goes, and then he puts his arm up in a vertical position, and he says, "My arm, by the way, has gotten stronger than when I started. And now I'm really great at painting ceilings."
There he is. Well, it's something that we don't think about. We see things and everything looks so simple, and children's show, and it's Big Bird, and I never even thought of that until I met you. I never thought of the idea that he has his hand in any different position. You know, obviously nobody's 8 foot tall, and I don't know if Spinney is particularly tall, but let me remind folks.
No, he's the average.
let me remind folks that are tuning in late, or just turning on their computers or turning on their radios. Frank McKay here on the Dr. Lucille Burbank radio show. And Dr. Lucille Burbank is the author of 3 wonderful books. And we're talking about Sesame Street here, and we're talking about children's television and puppetry and things looking easy and being really difficult. But one of the things that is difficult, and I think you make it look easy, is getting all this information out, because it is not. I mean, it is a world that many of us, myself included, my children grew up on, Sesame Street. I'm very proud to say that. I don't know much about it. And when I met you, I now know about it because of the time we've spent, and I'm very fortunate for that. But there's so much out there on this show. And to learn about Sesame Street is to learn about children's television. It's to learn about education. It's to learn about the gap between, you know, pre-1969 children's education and post Sesame Street. And that's what we're gathering here, and what you gathered. How difficult was it to gather this information and then decipher it and then kind of, impart it to everyone through your books? What was the difficulty level from your standpoint between what you thought it was going to be and what it ultimately was?
Well, I knew it would be cumbersome. I really did, but it was my dissertation, and I did receive a scholarship to do a bigger study than normally. And so I studied three shows that were very successful for children, including Sesame Street, then there was Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and Captain Kangaroo, which is really a precursor to the educational element you find on Sesame Street. What I did, because I was there, and in fact, when I told Bob McGrath, who is an actor, who's been an actor on Sesame Street since it began in 1969, when I was asking him for an interview and I told him what I was doing, he said, "Oh my gosh." And I said to him, "Oh, I will send you something from, I went to Temple University in Philadelphia, PA." Mm-hmm. And I said, "I'll send you a letter so that you know all this is legit." And he said to me on the phone, Nobody in their right mind would be doing a study like this. Come on up.
Well, I disagree with him. I think you are in your right mind. And again, Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio is in progress and thrilled to be here. Frank McKay with Dr. Lucille Burbank. Let's talk about a meeting you've mentioned to me off mic between Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, and Carol Spinney, and a request Mr. Rogers had that Carol couldn't grant him.
Yes, that is that is quite interesting. And as Carol Spinney would say to me, imagine having an argument with Fred Rogers, who is just this very, very laid back person. So how this came about is, I'm just going to back up, because there was a happenstance that I mentioned in the book, that if this experience hadn't happened to Carol Spinney, he might have said, "Okay, I'll take off part of my costume to give you a separation from reality and make believe." In other words, let me just clarify, Sesame Street, according to Jim Henson and his philosophy with the Muppets, blurs the line between reality and fantasy. He doesn't want any definite division. And Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was very, very careful to make that division, to keep everything separate so the children would know, well, indeed was fantasy, what was make-believe, and what was reality. Yeah. So keeping that in mind, Spinney, when he was working at Sesame Street years ago, he was preparing to shoot a scene when a Klieg light, I think it weighed about 100 pounds, and those lights are very bright and very hot.
Oh, I'm sure.
And it just happened to fall to the ground and crash a foot away from him. And it was throwing out all this burning chunks of asbestos and glass. And all of a sudden, in 2 seconds, Spinney's looking at his costume and he's going, "I'm on fire."
Wow.
You know, "I'm on fire." And lo and behold, which... it's hard to believe, but there wasn't a fire extinguisher in sight. There was no fire extinguisher. So Richie King, the cameraman, took his hand and slapped the flames out. Ugh. And he did really save Spinney's life, because that asbestos and that flame with that costume would go up immediately.
Well, did you say asbestos?
Yeah, it was burning asbestos.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And, see, when you said on fire, I'm thinking just heat, just hot. You're talking about actual fire. It set fire to the suit. I mean, that's serious business.
Yeah, when the light hit the ground in the set, and it's not uncommon, and especially back then, they didn't have the protection we have today, it threw out broken glass and burning chunks of asbestos everywhere. And so obviously a piece landed on Spinney's costume and he was on fire instantly.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long ago was that, roughly? I mean, was that
That was a while ago because Look magazine was there doing a photo shoot. And that is important because when Jim Henson, who is Spinney's boss, saw the picture of Carol with his head half out of his costume, he said, oh my gosh, you should never do that because I want to keep the fantasy aspect for the children. And if they see this, it'll ruin it. And so, you know, Spinney agreed with him because that was the nature. So then when Rogers asked him to come to the house to be on his show, and he would say something like, what's it like in there? Take off your costume, show us how it works. That's the reality part of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. But he said, I can't do that. I can't do that. I don't believe in it. This is why Spinney can walk down the street and no one knows he's Big Bird, because he never shows himself until recently, about 22 years into Sesame Street, he decided to show himself. But even his grandchildren did not know for a long time that he was Big Bird.
Wow. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Why?
And,
and I get it. I understand both standpoints. Mr. Rogers or Fred Rogers, just a very successful children's television show host. And really he has no peer when it comes down to what he did. And Sesame Street, which certainly has no peer on a whole with what they've done and the impact that they've had. And both have different philosophies when it comes to that. But I think it's a very fascinating point. Dr. Lucille Burbank is the one making the point. Her wonderful books are out there. You can get them on Amazon and everywhere fine books are sold. Fourth book along the way. And we can't wait to hear that. Inside Secrets of Sesame Street is what we're getting here. We're getting a bit of that, but you really need to read the book in order to get the whole feel. Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio is in progress. Frank McKay here with Dr. Lucille Burbank. Going back to that for a second, you mentioned Jim Henson and and his philosophy, the idea that that there should be this mystery. There should be, you shouldn't see, for example, the Lone Ranger without his mask, or Superman without his cape. It's the same thing with the Muppets. You shouldn't see who's doing that. That's a philosophy, and I understand it. Fred Rogers is the opposite. He wants to explain to kids that no, there's something going on. There's somebody inside there, and there's somebody doing that. Both are right, and it's very rare that two philosophies can be right, but it is an example of one particular example where both sides, I completely understand their standpoints. Do you agree?
I do, and you're absolutely right, Frank. What, what we have to realize is you really can't compare the shows. What works for Sesame Street and what works for Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood depends on how Mr. Rogers, how Fred Rogers creates and the aura of his show. And Sesame Street has a whole different aura. And you just have to look. Every show is unique and special. What Sesame Street did, because they were going to follow Mr. Rogers' lead, and all the experts said to them, hey, you want to keep it separate. You want to keep reality and fantasy separate from the children. So they did research, as they always do. This is one, Sesame Street is one of the most researched shows ever in television, children's or otherwise. So they researched it out, and they found that And they put the Muppets underground or in a separate segment, and the actors were on the street, and they just separated the whole fantasy aspect. But they found for their show, unlike Roger's show, that it didn't work. The tension just plummeted down, just fell right down when the after the children were watching the Muppets, then they went back to the street with just the actors. They lost the children's attention. So it can be also the sophistication of the audience, but each one is very unique and very special. And the same thing goes with Captain Kangaroo, just real quickly. What would work on Captain Kangaroo wouldn't work on Sesame Street and wouldn't work on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Although Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Captain Kangaroo were a bit more similar than Sesame Street.
Yeah, you know, more focused on the humans and everything else.
Right.
Yeah, very interesting. Let's take a quick break. Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio is in progress, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back for our part two of this and really our part four. Frank McKay signing off. We'll be back next time on Dr. Lucille Burbank Radio.